WWE on Netflix is truly the best thing ever. But there's one catch. Not everybody gets that. A lot of you are still watching WWE the old school way, on cable, dealing with boring commercials while I'm enjoying uninterrupted action. Let's fix that with today's sponsor.
I couldn't have said it any better myself, Stephanie, and that's why you need ExpressVPN.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
I love you, Solo!
Mama Monster.
Conquered! I'm home!
I want your soul.
You like fighting a woman?
You got grown-ass wrestlers in the back going on Twitter.
Come over here and fight me.
Is that Pat Patterson?
You have legs.
Holy mackerel, did he get fat?
I was 99% positive it was just chest up.
No. Congratulations. Who hasn't beat Daniel Garcia?
All the people I would have expected to be talking about skipping boring commercials and basically calling you an idiot if you pay $30 for ESPN. Stephanie McMahon would not have been that person. I wonder when she read that copy off the teleprompter if she even knew what it said beforehand. But I'm glad she's echoing what I've been telling you guys for years now. You need a VPN. And yes, ExpressVPN is the only one you should be using because I've got an offer just for you. And they're not even sponsoring the show this week, but I'm plugging it anyway. There's one more early Raw this Monday in Paris. That starts at 2 p.m. on Netflix. You don't need a VPN to watch that one early. But if you want to avoid the commercials and watch the action during the breaks, not that there is a lot of action, but if you don't want to sit through the commercials during Raw, make sure you've got your VPN running in the background and you're good to go. I have a feeling it's going to come in real handy for a lot of people once those PLEs move to ESPN in a few weeks. Hey, shout out to our friend Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury on the YouTube streams. He emailed a flyer to me for a photo op that is being offered at the Scaradice Convention at the Florida State Fairgrounds on Saturday, October 4th. You can get your picture taken with Sting in full Wolfpack makeup and RoboCop. And not just any RoboCop, RoboCop himself, the RoboCop, Dr. Peter Weller, who will not be in costume, which is a bummer. But still, Sting and RoboCop reunited. Sting's not wearing the makeup anymore after the end of this year. So this is probably the one and only time this is even going to happen. I think it may have already sold out because I don't even see it listed on their website anymore. But he says in the email to me, I thought you might get a kick out of this. My fiance showed this to me and said that she didn't understand why they would be doing photos together at a convention. She just started watching wrestling last year. I showed her the Capital Combat 90 footage and she said it's either the greatest thing that she ever saw or the dumbest. All I could say was, that's pretty much wrestling in a nutshell. Indeed it is. Also, Vice TV has released the full Dark Side of the Ring episode to its YouTube channel on Daphne, who passed away 4 years ago. I reviewed that episode on Sound Off 915. It's a powerful episode, very sad. But it also ends on an uplifting note, oddly enough, despite her sad ending. So it's well worth your time if you are not familiar with her story. This is episode 927 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Saturday, August 30th. 2025, a day early again with Clash in Paris taking place tomorrow, and I've got a final preview and predictions for the show, as well as news on Raw moving to an earlier start time next month. Jake Hager is no fan of Tony Khan. He made that abundantly clear in an interview with Chris Van Vliet this week. I'll talk about that. There may be a lawsuit coming soon, the first of possibly several, in the death of Hulk Hogan. I will talk about why and by whom the suit may be filed. And then there's the Raja Jackson story. The podcast went up earlier the same day as the incident happened last weekend, so I didn't get a chance to address it on episode 926. But I'm glad I didn't, because there was a lot more that came out in the aftermath of the incident where he nearly beat a wrestler to death in the middle of the ring. I did speak my piece on this on Wednesday. I dropped something for all of you on YouTube. That is what you will hear on the show today, for those who may have missed it, because not everybody listens on there. And even those who did, it's 25 minutes that's well worth listening to again. So I've got that for you as well. I'll save that for later. If you would like to make a PayPal donation, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout out. I want to say thank you to Beast Mode, Brock Joseph. Brock, thank you. I hope you're doing well, brother. The Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton. Big B, Bryant Becerra. The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard. Night Stalker, Nayef Alsafar. Rule Breaker, Rakish Gordon. Raj Must-See Makwana. Thank you, my friend. Killshot Keith Hart. I will see you on Thursday, brother. Show Your Role, Chris Ludeck. Check out his What Could Have Been in Wrestling series on YouTube. He's also got a video up right now reacting to my list of the top babyface turns in wrestling history. Just search for Chris Ludeck by name on YouTube. That's L-U-D-E-C-K-E. And my condolences to Jake the Snake Harrison. His grandfather passed away last week. He said he raised him like his own son and called him Jake the Snake, just like his grandmother used to, Sharon, when he was a kid. And the best way for anyone to honor him is to always be kind and caring to others like he was. I think that's a fine piece of advice. And again, Jake, my condolences. I'm very sorry to hear that. This Thursday, I will be in Philadelphia for House of Glory, streaming live on Triller TV Plus at 8 p.m. from Trinity at 22nd. We ran this venue, actually a joint show, with Sammy Callahan's promotion in Philadelphia last year over WrestleMania week, and packed it in. So hopefully we will be able to do the same this time with Zilla Fatu challenging Bully Ray to try to get back his Crown Jewel Championship. Bully's had a few nights in Philly that have gotten rough in his day. He's had a few fights in that city. So this will be another one to add to that list. Charles Mason defends his HOG world title against WWE ID prospect Marcus Mathers, who was very impressive last time we had him on one of our shows. Cedric Alexander returns to take on Amazing Red. Main event, Jay Lyon and Midas Black defend the HOG tag team titles against Leo Rush and Action Andretti. And Shotzi, who's been running in and causing all kinds of chaos on our shows, will finally have to wrestle an actual match. And if she wants to even be considered for a women's championship match against Indy Hartwell, she will have to first get past Priscilla Kelly. So all that and more. Tickets are available at hogwrestling.net. I hope to see some of you there. I know Keith will be there. Shout out to Keith. But hopefully I'll get to see some more of you guys there in Philly. WWE presents Clash in Paris tomorrow at the Paris La Défense Arena with around 30,000 fans expected, making it the largest pro wrestling crowd ever in France. It's also the largest indoor venue in all of Europe. Starts at 2 p.m. Eastern from Paris, France, with a six-match card that was finalized on SmackDown last night. I will be live on YouTube at 8 p.m. Eastern for the post-show recap, my final show for the month of August. So let's make it a good one. Drew McIntyre is going to be challenging Cody Rhodes for the WWE Championship. Not on this show, but very likely a WrestlePalooza next month. But Dave Meltzer is reporting that Cody will be done filming Street Fighter by September 20th, which is the date of the show, which implies that he may not be around much on TV to actually promote the match, which is hard for me to believe. Cody and his wife Brandy just had baby number two this week, a baby girl named Leilani Ella Runnels, which was a surprise given that there was no mention of them expecting a second child. See, and they say you can't keep secrets in wrestling anymore. So Cody has a lot on his plate lately, but again, I would be surprised if we don't get that match at WrestlePalooza. And I thought there might be a chance of them announcing McIntyre against Randy Orton for this show, and this would be the sixth match that was added to the card. They did not do that. So if we are going to get Cody and Drew at WrestlePalooza, which is the next PLE after this, that would imply that we might be getting Orton and McIntyre as a TV main event. So because I don't know why you would just go right to McIntyre and Cody without doing a McIntyre-Orton match, given that we've had 2 weeks in a row now of confrontations between them. But that will not be taking place on this show. Another match that was supposed to take place on this show and is no longer is Stephanie Vaquer, who won a battle royal last month at Evolution to earn the right to challenge for the Women's World Championship. She was supposed to wrestle whoever the champion was. It was Naomi. And of course, Naomi had to vacate the title. Jimmy Uso made sure of that. So the title is vacant. And I thought that we would get the announcement on Monday of who would be challenging Stephanie on this show. But then Adam Pearce told her that he needed another week to make things official. He's got a name in mind, but he needs more time. So unfortunately, Stephanie will not be wrestling in Paris. That means that Stephanie Vicaire will have gone through the entire month of August without wrestling a single match. That is beyond ridiculous. And some people still think it's a good idea for her to win the championship here. She's barely been visible on TV. There's no story. There's no nothing. Why are you going to put the championship on her? It would be a complete waste. Hold off until WrestleMania for that. Or have her be the one to dethrone Becky Lynch for the Intercontinental title. I would be okay with that too. And then follow up with, you know, the NXT blueprint. They did the same thing with her there. She won the North American Championship before she ever won the NXT Women's Championship. I think that would actually be a great way to go about it. That's what the IC title should be used for, to elevate somebody newer to that next level. And what better way to do that than by having her beat Becky Lynch? You know, as much as I would love to see Rhea Ripley against Stephanie Vicaire, if they wanted to do Rhea Ripley against Bianca Belair, let's say, in Vegas next year, then I would be totally fine with that and let Stephanie have an extended reign as the Intercontinental Champion. But right now she's challenging for the world title against who we should know this Monday. We should know the who, what, where, when, as far as that goes. Io Sky would make the most sense. I've been saying this for weeks. Both women were owed title matches by Naomi. Based on what Adam Pearce said, it doesn't sound like it's going to be that simple, or else he wouldn't have needed to delay the announcement by a week. Like, if he was just going to announce Io Sky, he would have just announced it. And the thought that I had, just based on what he was saying, and I mentioned this on TNT Tuesday night, what about Bianca Belair? What if the holdup is that they thought she would be medically cleared in time, but she wasn't? But they expect her to be, and they're planning on moving her from SmackDown to Raw, and we get Bianca against Stephanie. Now, Io makes more sense because Bianca did nothing to earn the shot, and it gets dicey if Bianca shows up and wins the championship, because then they go to Perth, where you figure Rhea Ripley is getting the shot. But I just throw that out there as a possibility. If it's up to me, just put Io Sky in there and be done with it. It doesn't prevent them from continuing with their little soap opera story with Io and the Kabuki Warriors. You can still do that. You could still play that out. In fact, when Io then turns around and loses the title to Rhea, it could be because of Asuka. So you could even work that into the story. To me, that's the path of least resistance, and we still get a great match out of it. That's what I would do. We'll see what they announce on Monday. Now, newly added to the show is the Wyatt Six, defending the WWE Tag Team titles against the former champions, the Street Profits, who beat Miz and Carmelo Hayes on Friday night to earn the shot. I don't see the Street Profits getting the belts back here. I think the Wyatt Six retain. Look, there were more exciting matches they could have added in this spot. I'm glad they added a sixth match. Yeah, it's not going to kill them to do that more often. There were other potential matches that could have been on this show that would have excited me more than this. But at least the tag titles are being defended again on a PLE. I mean, they went so long without, you know, and then they did the TLC match at SummerSlam, which was great. So, I can't hate on them at least adding one tag team title match to this card. But again, I can't say that this really does much for me here. Nikki Bella is going to be challenging Becky Lynch for the Women's Intercontinental Championship. Becky won the title of Money in the Bank, and she has defended that title on every PLE since, including Evolution, SummerSlam, and now Clash in Paris. It pays to be a top name holding a mid-card title. I wish Triple H would at least make an attempt in good faith with Julia in the U.S. title on SmackDown. Because that woman won the title in June and has had a grand total of one defense this entire summer. The summer is almost over. And that one defense that she had was in a rematch with the former champion, Zelina Vega. That was back on August 1st. That is awful. You know, I can understand not wanting to saturate the shows with world title defenses. You want to keep those special. But there's no reason these mid-card titles should not be defended on a regular basis. Otherwise, what's the point in even having them? But on Monday night, Becky and Nikki, they traded insults back and forth. Nikki held her own just fine. But it was some comments that Becky Lynch made to get heel heat while they were in Birmingham, England, that got her in some hot water this week. And I think this is all much ado about nothing. But Kelly Osbourne, the daughter of Ozzy Osbourne, who passed away on July 22nd, was not happy with the comments that Becky made in her father's hometown when Becky called Ozzy the only good thing to come out of that city, the only good thing that came out of here died a month ago. But in fairness to Ozzy Osbourne, she said, he had the good sense to move to a proper city like Los Angeles. Because if she lived in Birmingham, she said that she would die too. Now, clearly, it was aimed toward Birmingham and not Ozzy himself. She said nothing bad or degrading about Ozzy Osbourne. But Kelly posted on her Instagram stories, "You are a disrespectful dirtbag. Birmingham would not piss on you if you were on fire. Hashtag Birmingham forever. Shame on the WWE for allowing such things to be said about my father and his home." I'll tell you who I feel bad for. I feel bad for the Becky Lynch fan page that she tagged, thinking that it was Becky Lynch. She actually tagged at BeckyLynch.fan11. I was like, whoops. Oh, well. Ozzy's in the WWE Hall of Fame. He probably would have had a good laugh about it all. And look, nobody can tell his daughter that she shouldn't be upset or that she doesn't have the right to be upset about it. I'm not going to tell somebody who just lost their father and is probably still grieving, you know, what she should or should not be upset about. All I can say is it didn't bother me. Like, I've heard things said on wrestling shows that were in poor taste. I didn't see anything wrong with what she said. But Dave Meltzer says that there has been talk of WWE issuing an apology or having Becky apologize for it. You know, whatever. Whatever they feel they need to do. But Becky's been entertaining with the heel stuff. She's not losing her title here, nor is Nikki Bella the one who should be taking the belt off of her, so this will be a Becky Lynch win. Sheamus and Rusev. You know, I mentioned the tag team titles being defended on a PLE. How about Sheamus getting a PLE match, or Rusev for that matter? They're going to have a good old-fashioned Donnybrook match, which should be really good. Both men come into this one win apiece, and they finally get that elusive PLE match. Anything goes, but with barrels of Irish whiskey at ringside. Beats the hell out of that stupid Prime Hydration station. I've got Sheamus for the win. We have Roman Reigns against Bronson Reed, Tribal Chief against Tribal Thief. Roman wants his shoes back. On Monday, Reed gave Roman a history lesson just to add a little more depth to the story here, saying Roman's tribe from Samoa is civilized, but Reed's is not. Reed's tribe was exiled to Australia, and Roman's tattoos were all paid for, but Reed's were earned. And Reed said that he was the Samoan that Roman's dad and uncle had warned him about, and he was about to find out why. At which point, Roman responded, "Hold up, this guy's Samoan? That means your ass belongs to me." It was a fine segment. It also went 27 minutes and did not need to be 27 minutes long. The only chance that Bronson Reed has, and I still think Roman Reigns is winning this match, but the only chance that he has is because Roman is leaving after this to go film his part as Akuma in the Street Fighter movie. He's going to be gone all of September. Why not give Reed the biggest win of his career? What do you have to lose? No one has ever kicked out of the tsunami splash before. Like, squashing Seth Rollins with those six tsunamis is what put this guy on the map. Why not let him beat Roman if Roman is going away anyway? Like, Bron Breakker has no match on the show. He could provide the assist. If you want Bron Breakker to distract or get involved in some way, fine. But if Reed beats Roman, when Roman comes back in a month, you've got the natural revenge story for the rematch in Perth. And Roman gets his win back. Right? He could even become the first man ever to kick out of the tsunami. Don't be afraid to beat your top names. Like, I like the fact that nobody has ever kicked out of the tsunami before. So if they were to have the balls to allow Reed to go over on Roman with the tsunami, even if it takes multiple ones, like, I'd be okay if Roman came back and Roman Reigns, you know, only one of the biggest names in the company, ended up being the first person to kick out of a tsunami. Like, that would be acceptable to me if they already went out of their way to allow Reed to get a win over him. I really don't see the harm in doing that. Like I said, don't be afraid to beat your top names every now and then. But they are. So I'm predicting a Roman Reigns win. I suspect if they were going to have one of these guys beat Roman and give them the rub, it would be Bron Breakker and not Bronson Reed. John Cena goes one-on-one with Logan Paul. Cena has schooled Logan on the mic the last 2 weeks, daring him to step up in Paris or get left behind, putting him over for his ability, but also putting him down for being selfish and arrogant. He did it again on Friday. That one wasn't as good as the promo from the week before that, but both I thought were some of the best promo work that Cena has done all year on this retirement tour. Although he didn't seem too bothered about Logan knocking him out with that punch last week and then running away. Nothing ever seems to bother John Cena. Like, even years ago in his prime, he could get screwed out of the championship on a Sunday. And then he would walk out, be the first one to walk out there on Monday with a big smile on his face. He used to annoy the shit out of me. Like, that's what sociopaths are like. There's a heel gimmick that could have worked for Cena. Think Christian Bale in American Psycho. My favorite part of that promo was Cena finding the kid in the crowd that he had insulted in a march in Brussels and apologizing to him, saying that he had a bad night. Everyone has a bad night. More like 5 months worth of bad nights, but they would like for us to forget about all that. It was all just a dream. It never happened. Now, they could be setting up for Cena to put over Logan, but Cena just, you know, to be going out there and losing all of his matches that are left between now and December, which is probably what's going to happen if he loses this one, I think would be terrible. I mean, he may be putting everybody over from here on out, and I can understand them wanting to use him in that way, but it's almost like if they were to do that and you have him putting over everybody, then nobody gets over. So I think he wins here, and if he loses, it should be to someone else, so it means more. So I think he absolutely should win this match. I think he will win this match because I look ahead to who his potential final opponents could be. It's a short list. Drew McIntyre is on that list. Gunther is on that list. I feel like whoever that person ends up being should go over and should win. I will see who they ultimately choose. Maybe I'll change my mind on that, but there's a time and a place for him to lose. And I just don't think this is it. And then we have the World Heavyweight Championship on the line in a four-way match. Seth Rollins defends against CM Punk, Jey Uso, and LA Knight. Rollins helped cost LA Knight a win on Monday against Bron Breakker. I've been saying it for weeks. I still think that LA Knight is taking the losing fall in this match, which now would be even worse for him, given that he just lost on Monday. So for him to lose on Monday and then be the one to take the pin on Sunday would be pretty awful. So I'd love to be wrong about this. You know, you got Jey Uso in there. No harm in beating Jey Uso. It's just not the sense that I get. You know, that they're building up this drama with Punk and Knight and Uso. They're all not getting along. They continue to fight each other instead of focusing on the one guy they should be trying to take out, which is Seth Rollins. And that will lead to their downfall on Sunday. Seth Rollins will retain the World Heavyweight Championship. That is your Clash in Paris card. Again, I will be live on YouTube at 8 p.m. Eastern for the full recap. Now, last week I mentioned a number of Raws coming up in September had their ticket times adjusted locally, and Netflix was listing those weeks for a 7 p.m. Eastern start time, 1 hour earlier than usual. Those are the September 15th, 22nd, and 29th dates. Now we learn from WrestleVotes Radio that those shows will indeed be starting an hour earlier, and the reason is due to the NFL. Both WWE and Netflix want to see how the shows perform against Monday Night Football on ESPN with the earlier start time, so this will minimize the head-to-head competition between the two shows by an hour. On the 15th and the 29th, there will be some NFL doubleheaders that Raw will be going head-to-head with, since the first game starts at 7 Eastern, and then I think the other one is 7:15. It's not currently known if this is going to be a permanent change or if it's one that might extend throughout the entire NFL season. Anything earlier is fine by me. It just means I get to go live with all of you an hour earlier than usual. So I love it. And Vince McMahon's attorney is trying to get the charges against him dismissed from his recent reckless driving case in Connecticut. This is according to a TMZ report. Mark Sherman said in a statement to TMZ that if the dismissal is granted, it would ensure a complete dismissal of the case, but still allows Vince to convey contrition and concern for the other drivers, which is his top priority. Oh, I'm sure the safety of others on the road is his top priority, which is why he's been driving around like an absolute lunatic for the other 60 years of his life. At this point, it's only marginally safer to be on the road with Vince McMahon than it is Tammy Sitch. So he had an arraignment hearing in Stamford on charges of reckless driving and following too closely, resulting in an accident. This was after the car accident on July 24th, which was the same day Hulk Hogan died. McMahon's next court date is October 16th for a disposition hearing. My take, he'll worm his way out of this. I mean, people with that much money always do. You know, if anything, he'll get a slap on the wrist. Don't do it again. And then he'll just go out and keep doing the same thing. The guy's fucking 80 years old. He's not going to change. He is who he is. He's never going to learn his lesson. You know what you don't need to have billions of dollars for, though? To improve your mental health and well-being. And on that note, today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You can find advice for everything these days. My God, I mean, good advice is one thing. That's great. But when you have people giving you advice about all sorts of things, they may not necessarily be qualified to be giving it. And when it comes to your mental health and well-being, you want to make sure that you're being steered in the right direction. That's why it's important to stick with trusted resources, like talking to live therapists who can give you personalized recommendations and help you break through all the noise. That's where BetterHelp Online Therapy can be an absolute game changer. Therapy offers a lot of benefits for your mental health when it comes to things like coping skills and stress management, relationship advice, even how to cope with trauma that you may have experienced in your life. It helps to talk to someone. And if you do, let it be someone who's qualified to be dealing with sensitive situations like that. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 5 million people across the globe. And many of those people can attest to how much it's worked for them, which is why BetterHelp has an App Store rating of 4.9 out of 5, based on over 1.7 million client reviews. It's also convenient. You can join a session with a therapist with the click of a button, and you can switch therapists at any time. BetterHelp is that trusted resource that you need in your life. Because look, we all have issues to deal with every day of our lives, maybe some of us more than others, but we all deal with it, big and small. And if it's something that's affecting your quality of life, you now have the power to actually do something about it. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a diverse variety of expertise. Talk it out with BetterHelp. Solomonster Sounds Off listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/solomonster. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/solomonster. Jake Hager, who is officially retired from the wrestling business, I shall light a candle tonight in memory, sat down for an interview with Chris Van Vliet that was posted this week talking about his career in WWE and AEW. Among the things that he mentioned, he was outright told, he claims, by someone in WWE at the time that John Cena refused to lose to him when he had his Money in the Bank contract to cash in, which is why he ended up beating Chris Jericho instead to win the world title on SmackDown. He also once pitched an idea that Tony Khan rejected when he was doing the purple hat gimmick, where he would basically turn into Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy, but instead of saying, "I am Groot," he would say, "I like this hat." and everybody in the Jericho Appreciation Society would know what he was saying when he said it. Which is why it's not always a good thing to let the talent have creative input. There's Exhibit A. He also said that he now runs his own trucking company called Hall & Oates. Now, I know he's not the only one using that name for their business, but he earns points with me just for being a Hall & Oates fan. I'll give him points for that. But what made headlines here were his comments about his time in AEW, which came to an end last year when they allowed his contract to expire. He said he's very jaded from his time in AEW, and he wishes that he would have just stayed doing MMA, where he was undefeated in 4 fights, 3 wins and 1 no contest. But he says that he felt disrespected after being offered an 18-month deal to stay with the company, which I believe he said he did sign, but he felt like it was a sign that Tony Khan really didn't want him there. He said, the negotiation process was very one way, and I could tell that, well, anyways, I always find a way to say this every day, so I think everybody should too, say, fuck Tony Khan. I could tell that he didn't want me there. He offered me like 1.5 years. I was like, bro, I just did Stadium Stampede twice. Don't act like Stadium Stampede didn't put AEW on the map. I was in the debut episode. I was the big spoiler. And you offer me 18 months after all that? So it was at that point and the way that he started running the business that it really, like, he wasn't a professional. I said it the exact way he just said it. He wasn't a professional because he only offered Jake Hager 1.5-year deal. Really. Of all the things that you could say, Tony Khan, that he's not a professional, and here's why. That's why he's not a professional. Because you thought that your worth was more than it really was, and that he only offered you 1.5 years. He claimed that after all of the Punk shit went down, there was a meeting that was just between the wrestlers. Veterans like Sting, Paul White, Chris Jericho, Bryan Danielson, and Jon Moxley were talking through the situation when Tony Khan stormed into the room. Lo and behold, he said, who comes into the room storming in? Daddy's little billionaire. And he's yelling at us because I think it was Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler didn't want to come in. They didn't like the storyline, so they refused to come to TV that day. And he was like, listen, I'll put you in a 6-man 6 minutes before the show and you're going to do it. And we're all just like feeling disrespected. And I still to this day wish I would have stood up and said, you know, a lot of things, but like, you just told Sting that you're going to put him in a 6-man and 6 minutes, but then you're going to honor him for his retirement. We all became his little playthings. I do remember it being reported there was a talent meeting at the time led by Moxley, Jericho, and Danielson, but this is the first I'm hearing of Tony Khan storming into the room like that. I would actually be impressed if he put his foot down like that. And so maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But the entire story is called into question when FTR responded, since their names were mentioned. First with Dax Harwood refuting Hager's claim, saying, Cash and I were at the All Talent Only meeting that was called by Brian Jericho and Mox. Tony never interrupted. Cash and I have never refused to show up to work, and I dare say if you look at our schedule since Collision started, we're the most consistent talent that make both shows every week. I'm not really sure where all of this is coming from, but it is mostly not true. Cash Wheeler then responded, and he never responds to shit like this on social media. It's always Dax. Dax is always the one who's up in his feelings about something. So for Wheeler to respond, you know it must be serious. Not only did he respond to Hager's claims, but he brought the receipts as well. He shared a DM exchange with Hager where Hager said, I apologize if you're upset. I said I think it was you two. Didn't say it definitely was, but that meeting happened. To which Wheeler replied, I know, but to say that I think and then to actually say our names makes us look like assholes, and it wasn't even us. We're assholes, but we show up for work. And Hager replied, I apologize, I should not have said your names, especially when I didn't know for sure. So at least he apologized. But then later, he must have been upset that Cash went public with that screenshot because he tweeted, the meeting happened, FTR was not there. They can't deny the story no matter how many text messages they post. Meanwhile, the story wasn't even about them. Yes, the story wasn't about them, but you're the one who brought up their names. I would be upset too. He doesn't really seem to understand that. In the end, who really gives a shit? He's talking about a meeting that happened 3 years ago. But he had more to say about Tony, saying he was good with starting storylines, but could never follow through with them. He said you couldn't tell him anything. He couldn't take criticism. He was fucking up, and we were all just having to deal with it. You know, like we all had blood, sweat, and tears put into that company. We were all there at the beginning. Like we had our careers behind us that helped build that company. And then we all had to just sit side by side and couldn't do anything because he wanted to run it the way that he wanted to run it. I mean, it's almost like it's his company. That's the way it goes. Same with Vince McMahon for all those years. It was his company and nobody could tell him to do things that he didn't want to do. No matter how many talents or fans said they wanted him out of there, it was his company. That's why the product was in the shitter for so long. That's why we got the dark days of Raw back in 2018 and 2019. Now, I'm not saying Hager is wrong, that people there didn't have a right to be upset or frustrated by that, but AEW is Tony's little play toy. That's what it is. He runs it like his own personal e-fed. It's always been that way. And there have been stories that were started, storylines, but then never had a resolution, or they did, but they weren't very good. Some of that may be due to injuries and other factors like the devil stuff, you know, with MJF and Adam Cole. That was a major storyline that just got completely derailed. But then you have someone like Daniel Garcia a few years ago when they were teasing a split with him and Jericho. And it looked like maybe he was going to be the one to take the Ring of Honor world title from Jericho and then kind of branch off on his own. Only it ended up being a dumb swerve and a terrible one at that. The Acclaimed. Remember when they got thrown through a plate glass window by a bunch of masked guys, which turned out to be the Undisputed Kingdom? And then they never got their revenge after they were off television for I don't know how long they were off TV for, weeks, months. Never bothered to get their revenge on the guys that threw them through that window. I know if somebody threw me through a glass window and put me on the shelf, I'd want to get revenge. Evidently, they didn't feel the same way. Britt Baker and Serena Deeb. Just this year, they started a storyline with Jeff Jarrett going after the world title that was so poorly received that Tony at least had enough sense to drop the entire thing. That was a good thing. That's an example of a storyline being started and then stopped. That was actually a good thing. But yes, you can absolutely find examples of Tony Khan doing this. Hager is not wrong about that. He also admitted that Tony did pay him well while he was there. So that's definitely not something that he was complaining about. Here's the deal with Jake Hager. Big guy, good wrestler. He was never over in AEW. His hat was over, okay? Don't mistake it for Jake Hager being over. His fucking hat was over. He had the personality of a coffee mug. Like, if you put a little purple hat on a coffee mug and drew a face on it, it would be just as over, if not more so, than Jake Hager was. I wouldn't be surprised if Tony Khan didn't like him and just didn't want him there. I mean, that's basically what he was saying. Chris Jericho is the one who got Hager his job in AEW in the first place. Tony hired him as a favor to Chris Jericho. And the first thing that they did was put Hager with Jericho when he debuted on that first Dynamite, right? They put him in the inner circle. It's the same reason why I've been saying that Killer Cross should not go to AEW, because Tony, if Tony would even take him, Cross shouldn't go there. It's not a good fit for him. He would not know what to do with him. Cross would end up working matches on Collision against Big Bill, another big guy that Tony doesn't seem to know what to do with. Tony doesn't know how to book these physically bigger guys from WWE, for the most part. You know, Bobby Lashley is one of the few exceptions. But those aren't the types of wrestlers that Tony likes. You could tell. You could tell what he likes if you just watch the product. Cross does not fit that, and neither did Hager. You know, he was lucky enough to have a friend work there who had some clout, and that got him gainfully employed, making, as he admitted, really good money for 5 years. You know what? That's nothing to be bitter about. Hager was simply out of touch with what Tony Khan was looking for. Now he gets to go be a family man to his two kids. His kiss was not on Tony's list. He lost that love and feeling. All right, that's enough. Sorry. Couldn't help myself. I still love the Hall & Oates thing, though. It's a great name for a trucking company. Speaking of Chris Jericho, amid all of the rumors and speculation about his future with his AEW contract expiring at the end of the year, Tony Khan was asked about Jericho on a media call Thursday ahead of the Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view, and Tony strongly put over Jericho's legacy in AEW and ROH and said that he thinks the world of him and that if and when the time presents itself, he would love to have him back. If and when the time presents itself. Those aren't the words of a man who thinks that Jericho is a lock to stay in his company. But beyond that, there is nothing new to report on that front. Sammy Guevara was teasing that Jericho could potentially be his partner on the ROH pay-per-view last night against the Outrunners, since Dustin Rhodes is out for the foreseeable future and they were the ROH Tag Team Champions. There were actually a lot of streaming issues with the pay-per-view, so midway through the show, Tony Khan decided to put the remainder of the ROH pay-per-view on YouTube for free, which was very cool. He said all Honor Club subscribers will get a month free as a result of the problems and that it would end up costing him hundreds of thousands of dollars, but that's okay because they made new fans. I will say they had upwards of 20,000 people watching live on YouTube at the peak during the Bandito Hechicero match, which was awesome. A little too long at 37 minutes, and it wasn't even the main event, but still an excellent match. I got to watch the last few matches since I got to wrap up my SmackDown stream early, and my Mets had a victory well in hand against the Marlins, 19-9. The poor Outrunners, they still cannot win any gold. They lost to Sammy Guevara, and his mystery partner turned out to be Roosh. They are the new Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions. It looks like Sammy has gone heel again. I watched the fight without honor between QT Marshall. Yes, I watched a 20-minute QT Marshall match against Paul Walter Hauser, who won a Golden Globe Award. If you didn't know that, just ask them. They'll tell you at least half a dozen times. And they had all the garbage with the barbed wire and the broken glass and the thumbtacks. Hauser's walking out of there. He's got a thumbtack sticking out the back of his skull. I will give credit to him, though. He put the work in. He earned his stripes in there. It's not for me, but the fans in that building in Philly, they were at the 2300 Arena. They got a residency there for these 2 weeks. Those people have seen far more violent matches in that venue than this one. And Athena retained her Ring of Honor Women's World title over Mina Shirakawa. They got 25 minutes. Bandito and Hechicero got 37 minutes. 25 minutes was more manageable, and they had a very good match, with Athena retaining because she's less than a week away from 1,000 days as champion, so she wasn't losing. But those last two matches were very, very good. That was the ROH pay-per-view. AEW pay-per-views may soon, finally, be available for purchase and streaming through HBO Max. Andrew Zarian of the Matt Men podcast posted on Thursday that he is hearing that there will be an announcement about this sometime in the coming weeks. Meanwhile, HBO Max has updated its terms of use for subscribers and now features a new section on one-time purchases set to go into effect on September 20th, which just so happens to be the same day as AEW's All Out pay-per-view. So it's looking very likely that All Out will be the first pay-per-view offered on HBO Max. Now, it is important to note, this is not like Peacock, where it's exclusive to HBO Max necessarily, and you get all the shows for free. It's still a pay-per-view, so you would still need to pay, but the belief is that you would be able to pay a reduced price if you watch it through HBO Max. I don't know that that's ever been confirmed, but you would think they would offer it at some sort of reduced price. So instead of paying $50 through YouTube or Triller or Amazon Prime, you would pay, say, $30. 20 would be even better, like Triller and a VPN. You pay $20. Somewhere in that 20 to 30 range would be the sweet spot. Hopefully there is some discount. Otherwise, there would be no incentive for people to watch on HBO Max. You may as well just stick to whatever platform you already use. But, I mean, we've been waiting almost a year for some sort of update on this thing. They have not had the technology to be able to support this until now. And who knows, there may even be issues and glitches with the rollout, but hopefully they have all the bugs worked out, and we will hear something in the next few weeks. I would love to be able to watch these shows on HBO Max for half the price. Now, last weekend was Forbidden Door, and Swerve Strickland has since had surgery since his loss to Okada. He has undergone surgery for his torn meniscus. He said the surgery was a success. We have no idea as far as how extensive the surgery was, if it was a full tear. I mean, it could be the difference between him being out for a few months or being out for 6 or 7 months. So we don't know. Same for Will Ospreay. He has not had neck surgery yet. We don't know when. We don't know exactly what the surgery is going to be. Is it a fusion? Is it not as serious as a fusion? What is safe to assume is that we are not going to see Swerve or Will Ospreay back in the ring for many months. And that's a big blow for Tony Khan. But the good thing about all the talent that he has under contract is you can't say that he's got nobody else to step up and take their place. So there will be an opportunity for someone to get slotted in there. They are in the middle of a residency of the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia. That is where they were on Wednesday. They were there again on Friday for the ROH pay-per-view. And they will be back there again this... Actually, I think they're there tonight for Collision. But they'll be there again this coming Wednesday for Dynamite. On Dynamite, they set the stage for Darby and Moxley at All Out. Even though John Moxley continues to refuse to accept Darby Allin's challenge, that match is coming. What they did on this show was Darby Allin and Claudio Castagnoli in a false count anywhere match. And Darby got the win, and then he went running out of the building because the numbers were too much. The Death Riders tried to attack, and so Darby fled, because evidently nobody bothered to come out to help this guy. But the Death Riders ride on. You know, when Moxley lost the championship in Texas, I thought that might be the beginning of the end of this group, and they have given no indication that the Death Riders are going anywhere anytime soon. So the question is, when does it end? Are they waiting? This is a thought that I had, because I've been following on Cesar Bonanni's YouTube channel. He has been documenting the training that he has been doing with Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston's been recovering from his broken leg, his torn ACL. I mean, his leg was all fucked up, and he's been out well over a year at this point. And it sounds like and looks like he's on his way back very soon. And it makes me wonder if maybe the reason that this Death Rider stuff is continuing on for the time being is they want to work Eddie Kingston into that story. You know, maybe in the Moxley and the Darby match, especially if Darby were to beat Mox, does that shake Claudio's faith in Moxley? You know, do the cracks begin to show? Because Moxley already lost the championship. If Moxley loses again, the believers may no longer believe. And is this where maybe we see an Eddie Kingston return? Are they going to factor him into the Death Rider stuff? Because Wednesday would have been the perfect place for an Eddie Kingston return. In Philly, in that building at the end of that show, coming out to help Darby. That would have been the perfect spot for it, especially with Claudio out there. He hates Claudio. I mean, remember, Eddie is the one who tried to convince Moxley years ago on TV that Claudio was a scumbag. He, you know, I don't trust him. So I do wonder if when we see him back, this is what he gets factored into. And it's Eddie Kingston, ultimately, who causes, you know, the Death Riders to crumble and kind of pulls John Moxley away from this and convinces him that, look, you don't need to be associating with this guy. You know, he doesn't have your best interest in mind. Meanwhile, Hangman Page is going to be defending his championship, it looks like, at All Out against a member of the Don Callis family, because MJF and Mark Briscoe are continuing their issue. And it's not that surprising. I mean, there was a report a few months ago that MJF was the one who pitched for this, that he really wanted to work a program with Mark Briscoe. And they've already had a few matches. I didn't know it was going to extend this long, but it looks like he's going to wrap things up with Briscoe before, you know, he worries about getting his rematch or cashing in his Casino Gauntlet contract for another championship match. So MJF and Mark Briscoe looks to be the match for All Out, possibly. As far as who Hangman could defend against, there's really only three options, even though the Callis family has probably fucking 85% of the male heels in this company under contract to Don Callis. But who realistically are we looking at here? We're looking at Kazuchika Okada, Konosuke Takeshita, or Kyle Fletcher. Okada is the unified champion. Fletcher is the TNT champion. I look at Takeshita. Takeshita has no title right now in AEW. You know, he's the G1 winner. He may have the IWGP title soon, but he has no championship. To me, I think Takeshita would be the play here. You do Hangman and Takeshita at All Out. They are continuing to tease dissension, though. We saw it on Wednesday between Takeshita and Okada. That's the right way to go with this. And you could do a slow burn. I don't know when that match actually happens, but Takeshita should be the one ultimately who takes that unified title from Okada. could be a few months from now. It doesn't have to be right now. But that's where things appear to be headed with Hangman for the pay-per-view. Adam Copeland and Christian Cage, it's already been made official. They will be wrestling FTR in Toronto at All Out. No tag team titles at this point on the line. It's just a straight match. The tag team champions now, of course, are Brody King and Bandido. I don't know where they fit into any of this. It almost feels like a late decision on Tony Khan's part, where it should have been FTR who ends up with the belts in time for Toronto, but he just decided, okay, there's some political bullshit going on. Let's put the belts on Brody and Bandido. That's what this feels like to me. The Hurt Syndicate, no longer tag team champions. They are, based on what we saw on Wednesday, going after Ricochet and the Gates of Agony. So when you look at that show from Wednesday, not the best episode of Dynamite coming out of a pay-per-view. And honestly, when it comes to these Dynamites, rarely does Tony Khan hit a home run with these post-pay-per-view shows. I don't know what it is, but it's almost like a post-pay-per-view hangover. Like, they leave it all out there on these pay-per-views. 4.5 hours, 5 hours, they throw everything at you, and then guys get hurt. And then they sort of limp into Dynamite a few days later, and they give you what they can, and it usually isn't that much. But what they did do, and you can't say they didn't do this, is they didn't set things up in terms of some of these stories for matches heading into All Out. It's what I just laid out there for you. What they should have done on that show, absolutely should have done more to establish Wardlow coming out of Forbidden Door. We had two returns on that pay-per-view last Sunday. Wardlow was one who we hadn't seen in a year and a half. The other one was Jamie Hayter, which is a great pickup for the women's division. There were some women who got hurt. She's not the only one. Jamie is back. I think Mina broke her hand, and so Mina Shirakawa is back. There was somebody else who got hurt and I think is back now. So as they start to get some of these women back, let's see what happens. I mean, Tony Khan has indicated that that was the reason why he had not already introduced women's tag team titles. As he gets some more of these people back, I think we're going to see those titles sooner than later. I think Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale are going to be your first women's tag team champions when that time comes. I mean, they got their own little story going on there. But as far as Wardlow goes, he just showed up at Forbidden Door and attacked Swerve and Prince Nana. And to my knowledge, has no connection to them. There's no specific reason why he would have specifically targeted them in his comeback. And then he went over and he hugged Don Callis, and they established that he's now part of the Don Callis family. And I said, well, I don't like this. On its face, I don't like this, although time will tell. But the Don Callis family has a lot of members, like close to a dozen members at this point, including some who are currently out injured. And who knows, maybe if and when they come back, they won't even be part of the Callis family anymore. You have Mark Davis and Brian Cage and Trent Beretta. So I think the exact number might be 11. I don't even fucking know. It's in the double digits. It'd be very easy for someone. Look at Josh Alexander. It'd be very easy for someone to just sort of get lost in the background. And we've seen this happen before where Wardlow has been a part of a faction and it didn't really do him any good. I don't really see where the Pinnacle did much for him. The Undisputed Kingdom stuff was just a complete and total failure in every sense of the word. So the first thing they do when he comes back on night one is they just throw him into another faction, and this is the biggest one yet. And it's like, whatever you do, don't let this guy just fade into the background. We need to hear from him. Where has he been? Why did he target Swerve? Why is he in business with Don Callis, right? There's a lot of questions to be answered here. And so we see him on Wednesday on Dynamite, and what is he doing? He is standing there in his suit, and he's standing there to watch Don Callis' back, and we don't hear a single word from Wardlow. He's barely even mentioned, outside of when they pointed out, hey, look, Wardlow came back at Forbidden Door, and here he is with Don Callis. That was it. That was the extent to which we heard anything about Wardlow on Wednesday. Now, you got Collision tonight, and you got Dynamite this Wednesday, but that first show, that first Dynamite coming out of the pay-per-view, that's the most important time. That's where you need to establish this guy, reestablish him. Let's hear from him. Let's hear more about him. Maybe he'll be in action. Nothing. Nothing. That was a mistake. That was a huge misfire. And it shows me that Tony Khan, at the end of the day, really doesn't give a flying fuck about Wardlow. And also nothing really doing on that show when it comes to Toni Storm or Mercedes Moné and their next programs. Although it looks like we're headed for another match between Mercedes and Alex Windsor. So their issue is going to continue. But for Toni Storm, at least on the Wednesday show, they didn't do anything to establish, you know, who her next challenger might be. Today's episode is sponsored by Hims. It's an experience a lot of men are terrified of. They look in the mirror one day and they notice their hair is starting to thin. It doesn't happen at the same age for everyone. For some, it happens earlier than others, but maybe it runs in your family. Maybe it's a hereditary thing. There are lots of reasons that it happens, but you see it and you think, well, that's it. My life is over. It's baseball hats for me from now on. Seriously, do you know how many men are walking around right now with a Mets hat on their head who probably couldn't even name three players on the entire team? They just need an excuse to cover up on top. But guys, you don't need to live your life that way. It happens way more than you think, and there is a way to reverse the problem. It really works with Hims. You can start regrowing your hair in as little as 3 to 6 months, so you can see a fuller head of hair in time for the holidays. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work, including chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. Doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil can stop hair loss and regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Why jump through hoops just to feel more like yourself? Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals within reach. There's no hidden fees, there's no surprise costs, just real personalized care on your schedule. Think of Hims as a portal to another dimension, one where you get to be your old self again, with simple 100% online access to trusted treatments for real health concerns all in one place. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/solomonster. That's hims.com/solomonster for your free online visit. hims.com/solomonster. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. Other news and notes. The latest on the death of Hulk Hogan per TMZ. Brooke Hogan says there was no foul play involved in her father's death, saying that she can rest easier since she has now seen the body. She says that she wants to keep it real with the fans, telling them that she's satisfied that everything is on the up and up. She says that she never expected murder or anything like that, but she wanted to see the evidence for herself just to put her mind at ease. And Brooke says that she was worried Hulk would look totally different 5 weeks after his death, but she says that he was already embalmed and she could almost imagine him jumping back into the ring today. Brooke confirmed that her dad has now had an autopsy done. She saw his chest, so presumably stitched up after the procedure. But she admits that she hasn't seen the results yet, so it is likely that Hulk's widow, Skye Daly, knows the status of his phrenic nerve since she has the autopsy results. And on that note, now comes this. Hogan's widow is reportedly planning to file a lawsuit against at least one of Hogan's doctors and others for medical malpractice that she says led to his death. Sources with direct knowledge tell TMZ Sports. The suit would center around the neck operation that Hulk underwent back in May. Skye first told us that she believes Hogan's phrenic nerve, which controls one's breathing, was compromised during that procedure. Those issues are thought to have played a significant role in his demise, as sources who have heard the 911 audio tell us that Skye informed the authorities on the emergency call, "My husband's not breathing, he just stopped breathing." Our sources say the 911 call makes it very clear that the 71-year-old did not suffer a sudden heart attack, and instead he just stopped breathing. In speaking with the Daily Mail, Skye said, "We are investigating for possible malpractice. If you have shortness of breath for a long time, that makes you very sick. It's not something that's a sudden cause of death, it's something that wears on you, makes you weak." Asked if that could have contributed to Hogan's death, she replied, "Definitely." TMZ also broke the story that an occupational therapist at Hulk's house the day he died informed police about the alleged phrenic nerve damage. Skye ordered a private autopsy done as part of her investigation into potential medical malpractice. While she has yet to release the findings, the fact that she is planning to sue strongly hints at the results of that autopsy. So that is the update on Hulk Hogan. Real American Freestyle Wrestling, by the way, is hosting its debut event tonight in Cleveland, billed as a tribute to Hulk Hogan. They are up to 3,100 tickets distributed, not necessarily sold, but distributed, in a building that fits 13,000. So that will be airing on Fox Nation if you should care to check it out. It's the Eric Bischoff show now, so start taking bets on the over-under for how long you think this is going to last. You've all heard about this Rajah Jackson story by now, the son of former MMA fighter and TNA star Rampage Jackson, nearly beating a wrestler to death at an independent show. This all happened after I dropped the sound off a day early last weekend, naturally. So I didn't have a chance to cover it until now. There's been a lot of things coming out, new video clips being posted. It's a very fluid story, and there's a lot to unpack here. But it's one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen in a wrestling ring. Outside of some of the worst injuries that I've ever seen, this one takes the cake. I've never seen someone nearly beaten to death in a ring before. And it happened at a Knox Pro Wrestling event in Los Angeles. This was last Saturday, which was, at the time, it no longer is, a WWE ID affiliate. It's the promotion co-founded by Rikishi, although he was said to not be present for any of this. His name is still attached to the promotion, though, right? His name is on it. He's been associated with it for the last 17 years. He's been radio silent on all of this. And it all started before the show. Rampage's son was live streaming on a platform called Kick. He and his dad both do a lot of in real life type of streams. Rampage was live streaming on his own platform when all of this went down. He actually got the news in real time about what his son had done at the event, and he was watching the video of it, and you can see his expression change. And then he left the stream. So these guys feel the need to live stream all aspects of their lives. And Rajah, who is not a pro wrestler, has never trained in pro wrestling, doesn't even watch it, is not even really a fan of it, was invited to the show by one of the wrestlers named AJ Mana, real name Andre Hudson. He's the one dressed up in these videos like a member of the Village People. And it starts with a video outside the venue where, before the show, there's a bunch of wrestlers hanging out back. And in the video, you can see Reno Anoa'i, who goes by the name Black Pearl, who co-founded the promotion with Rikishi, I believe, and actually runs it. He was there. He was right there for all of this. And Rajah is standing around outside, and there's a wrestler named Psycho Stu, real name Stuart Smith. He's a U.S. Army veteran who apparently wrestles to deal with PTSD from his time as a vet. And he walks over, and he smashes a beer can over Rajah's head. It may or may not have been an empty can. It doesn't really matter. And Rajah was not expecting this because nobody warned him. No one smartened him up. Of course, he doesn't sell it because he's not a worker. He's not a wrestler. And this guy who he doesn't know just smashed a beer can over his head. Now, if Rajah would have swung at him and knocked him out with one punch, we're not talking about this story right now. This story is not making national headlines. And there is not a whole lot of outrage over this story, if that's all that happens. Not unless he knocked him out and killed him with one punch, then we are. But I honestly don't think anybody would have blamed Rajah for reacting that way in that circumstance. You know, if someone walks up to you and smashes you in the head with a beer can, especially if you're a fighter, your first instinct is probably going to be to take a swing at him or throw something at them or whatever it may be. So he doesn't sell it. Black Pearl steps in between them, as does AJ Mana, who now realizes the gravity of the situation. He's the one who brought this man to the show in the first place. Rajah was his guest. It should have been his responsibility to step in and smarten him up. And Black Pearl, who runs the promotion, is trying to explain to Rajah, you know, Psycho Stu thinks everything is a work. You know, it's all good. He thought you were a wrestler and everything's a work. And Stu later apologized to Rajah three times, in fact. A sincere apology once he realizes that this man is not a wrestler. You can even see Stu tell him, look, I'm sorry, man. I saw the camera filming. I thought you were a worker. And after initially refusing his handshake earlier, Rajah finally accepts his apology and they shake hands. And it looks like everything is smoothed over. That's where this should have ended. It was a misunderstanding. It's like the most boring beef in the world, and it's over and done with, right? Shit happens, he apologized for it, and you move beyond it. Then we see video of AJ with Raja backstage at the event where they have decided to turn this into an angle. So Raja is going to do a run-in during Stu's match, and as AJ says in the video, you're going to run in on his shit and give him a receipt. And he asks him, because you remember what a receipt is, right? Give him a receipt and tag that shit. They got a fucking problem with it? I'll run out there. There is so much wrong with this, not the least of which is, according to his father, Raja had suffered a concussion in a sparring session days before this, and he should not have been doing anything physical at all. I don't know if his quote-unquote friend AJ was aware of that or not, but that's number one. Number two, if all this guy knows of wrestling is what his friend AJ has told him, and he had to explain to him what a receipt is by telling him you got to go in there and give him his receipt and tag that shit, right? It sounds like he's giving him permission to go in there and fuck this dude up for real. Just completely irresponsible on his part. And again, this man was his invited guest. He brought him in. He has to bear some degree of responsibility here for allowing any of this to happen in the first place. And the promotion had to know, or someone in the promotion had to know, because the wrestler here is not setting up a spot for a non-wrestler to run in without somebody being clued in about it. I mean, someone gave this man his cue to hit the ring when he did. So the promotion had to know about it or approve of it in some way. Now, I'm not a wrestler, but for a wrestler to tell a non-wrestler that it is okay to get a receipt on another wrestler sounds insane to me. AJ issued a statement later on trying to explain that he was in character when he made those comments to Raja backstage about getting a receipt. He said, "Everything I said was part of the show." Spoken like someone who knows he could be in a lot of hot water if he doesn't cover his ass. Nobody with a functioning brain believes that. But he may be hoping that the district attorney is dumb enough to believe it because it's pro wrestling. And if you blur the lines just enough, he might be able to create just enough doubt to where this shit won't blow back onto him, even though it should. And he wasn't the only person who bears some level of responsibility here for getting this man hyped up to do something. What followed was actually really sad, because Raja sat there in the front row during the show with his face buried in his phone, scrolling through comment after comment after comment on his live stream feed from people who were egging him on, telling him he has to do something, right? Like, as a man, you can't let that stand, and calling him a bitch. Sitting there for an hour reading the chat absolutely played a role in this, because when you have a person like this who is clearly mentally unstable, it does not take much to send them over the edge. And this man is obviously very unstable. So then he's sitting there on video telling everybody exactly what he is going to do, because he's all mic'd up, right? It's completely premeditated. Not just premeditated as a wrestling spot, like I'm going to hit the ring and take him down, but like popping off about how he's always wanted to hit a pro wrestler or knock out a pro wrestler. Like he's openly saying these things. Like, this should be the easiest police investigation ever with all of the video that's out there of him saying these things in the lead up to the attack. But his followers clearly got him all wound up before he ever set foot inside that ring. And when he did, it was terrifying. He slides into the ring. He picks up Stu like he's nothing. He slams him down hard to the mat, hard enough that it looked like Stu was knocked loopy before the first punch was even thrown. And then the punches rain down. 22 of them in total, almost 24 punches. And these were not worked punches, okay? And he wasn't pulling his punches. This wasn't like 50% of his punching power. He was punching this man, who was completely defenseless, mind you, not even getting his hands up because, again, he was probably knocked out already, but hitting him as hard as he possibly could. Like, if this happened in the octagon, Herb Dean would have dove in for the stoppage after the second punch. He would have called the fight right then and there. But Herb Dean was not the referee for the match. They may as well have had fucking Paula Deen out there as the referee. She would have been about as useful as the guy who was. He probably had piss running down his leg. We just couldn't see it. And look, I'm sure he was scared to death by what he was seeing. Even if he at first thought it was a work, it became pretty clear, though, pretty quickly that it was no longer a work, and it had escalated to something a lot worse, but he just stood there, waving his hands like, no, get off of him. Oh, yeah, that's really going to help. So nobody did anything. It took 13 punches before the guy in clown makeup got into the ring to try to stop him, and even he wasn't making much of an attempt, until finally another wrestler, Doug Drago, runs into the ring to get this man off of him, and he busts his own head open with a headbutt trying to subdue him. And you can see Stu laying there on the mat with just blood pouring out of his head. Had Doug not intervened when he did, we would be talking about a murder charge for Rajah Jackson right now. Not attempted murder or assault or battery or whatever you want to call it, because he wasn't going to stop. He said in the video before the match he was going to punch this man for real until somebody pulled him off. And even when people tried to stop him and pull him off, he continued to assault that man. He absolutely would have killed him, or at the very least, punched him into a coma with permanent brain damage. And the referee would still be standing there waving his arms around like one of those wacky inflatable tube men that you see at the fucking car dealership. Stu was not conscious when they rushed him to the hospital. They couldn't wake him up. There was a very real fear that he could die. Rajah, who was being filmed for his kick stream throughout all of this, okay, still streaming. They kept the stream going. They followed him, whoever his friend was who had the camera and was filming him. I mean, it really felt like something out of a wrestling show. Like, it's following him as he's being, you know, led out of the building after the incident. And he's in the street. He's walking down the street. And he just starts raving like a lunatic about how he's tired of everybody playing with him and people calling him bitch. He was talking about his father. There's another clip of Rampage calling him earlier before the beating, but Rajah is sitting in the front row at the wrestling show. So it happened that night. But like in the clip I saw, they kind of spliced the two videos together because they were both streaming. Again, it's like they're each streaming 24 hours a day. And Rampage is giving him a hard time for hugging some dude. I think it was one of his coaches. I'm pretty sure it's in reference to something completely unrelated to the, you know, incident that we're talking about and the wrestling stuff. But Rampage is just giving him shit for hugging this guy. And then later on, as Rajah is sitting there at the show scrolling through his chat, he makes the comment, "Watch, my dad can't never call me a bitch." So after everything happens and he's leaving and walking down the street completely unhinged, and he's screaming about people calling him a bitch, like, I'm telling you, he's talking about his dad. In some warped way, part of this was him proving to his father that he's no bitch. It's like, watch what I do. I'll show you. This is someone with severe daddy issues and a lot of pent-up rage inside of him. He was a powder keg waiting to explode, and from the moment that beer can smacked him in the head, that lit the fuse. Now, Stu defused it with the apology, but then the cowboy, good old AJ, he lit it back up again when he told him to go get his receipt. And it was only a matter of time before he exploded after that. There are a lot of people who bear responsibility for this, and even if you believe that Psycho Stu should bear some of that too, it does not excuse his behavior here. Nothing that Stu did earlier that day warranted what we saw in that video. Nothing. And anyone trying to blame the victim here is just as disgusting as this piece of shit is. Like, how morally bankrupt do you need to be to make any kind of excuse for what we saw in that ring? Now, the LAPD is investigating the incident. Meanwhile, Rajah is still walking around a free man. Maybe not for much longer. Hopefully not for much longer. Someone that volatile should not be walking the streets. Knox Pro issued a statement later on that reads, "First and foremost, our thoughts and prayers are with our brother, Mr. Stuart Smith, Psycho Stu, as he remains a priority, and we are monitoring his well-being. What was supposed to be a planned and agreed-upon wrestling spot turned into a selfish, irresponsible act of violence against Mr. Smith. This egregious act is reprehensible and never should have occurred. In the 17 years of operation of Knox Pro Wrestling Academy, there has never been anything as heinous to take place as this, and we apologize to our patrons and our fans." They have since, rightfully, been stripped of their WWE ID designation. I mean, that was a no-brainer. Not only because WWE would want to do everything in its power to distance themselves from this school and this promotion, But because when you accept a designation like this, there should be certain expectations, one would think, that you are going to conduct your business in such a way that aligns with a designation like that. And Knox Pro failed to do that. From using a non-wrestler in a wrestling angle without even going over what it was that they were supposed to be doing, to the assault itself, and then the way that it was handled, to one of the wrestlers covering Psycho Stew in the video as he laid there unconscious, literally choking on his own blood and teeth so that the referee could count to three. Because kayfabe, I guess. The man is laying there dying, but let's count the fucking fall. When you are given the WWE designation, the ID designation, in theory, you are being given their seal of approval that this is a credible group where people can safely learn, right, and train and be prepared for the next phase of their career. And everything about this screamed amateur hour, like as amateur as it can get. So WWE had no choice but to make an example out of them. Now, Stu's brother, Andrew, posted on Monday that Stu is stable but in critical care. He only has some recollection of what happened from early parts of the day. The latest update on Wednesday is that he is talking a little bit. He's alert. But he still has injuries that, you know, while not life-threatening at this point, are still very serious. But it did come with a photo of him sitting up in his hospital bed surrounded by friends, which was nice to see. A GoFundMe page has been set up to assist with medical expenses and a loss of income. Obviously, he's not going to be able to work for a while. I don't believe wrestling was his full-time career, but whatever else he does, he will not be doing it for a while at the very least. Last I checked, and this is as of late day Wednesday, it had raised over $150,000. Mr. Beast, who has over 420 million subscribers on YouTube alone, became aware of the incident because it made national news. And I saw that he dropped 10 grand alone on the campaign. So he's been getting a lot of support. Then there's the legal aspect of this. Now, legally, the question should not be if he will face punishment for what he did, but how stiff that punishment is going to be. And it shouldn't matter whether somebody wants to press charges. I see some people asking, you know, is he going to press charges? Do they need him to press charges? What you see in that video, I mean, at the very least, is clearly battery. The question becomes, in the state of California, how do you define attempted murder? Which is what this looked like. I mean, if you watch this video, right? You don't have to be a lawyer, just as a layman person, you watch this video and it looks like you are watching an attempted murder. But that boils down to intent. You need to be able to prove that he intended to kill this man, not to seriously injure him, to kill him. So the intent to inflict bodily harm, that's not enough. I would argue 24 shots to the skull to a man who was clearly knocked out and unable to defend himself. And again, he wasn't going to stop if somebody didn't intervene. That tells me he was pretty intent on ending that man once those emotions took over and the adrenaline kicked in. But proving intent, it looks like that's going to be a heavy lift. So if he was to be charged with a crime here, he could be looking at felony battery. And a felony battery conviction in California, from what I've seen, may result from in a sentence of up to 4 years in prison. So even if he gets locked up, it's not like he's doing 25 to life or anything like that. It'll be very interesting to see if he is charged, if he tries to use the concussion as part of his defense, you know, as his father brought up in that statement. I mean, it would be a hell of a reach, but I mean, that's what lawyers do. They defend their clients. For him not to be charged with a crime here for what he did would be just an absolute injustice. And then you consider the civil aspect of this where he could be sued by Psycho Stu for what he did. And that, to me, I mean, that's a slam dunk case if he does. Stu might even have a case against the people at Knox Pro if he wanted to pursue it. And what an unsafe work environment that turned out to be. They come off looking bad enough when it comes to how we even got to this point in the first place. But then on the Scaling Up podcast, it was alleged by a former talent there named Ian that the promotion has instructed those who work there not to speak with the authorities or any attorneys should they reach out to them. Instead, they said they should come to the promotion first for guidance. And in the podcast video, they show screenshots, allegedly, from Kevin Thomas, a.k.a. KT King, instructing people to, quote, please refrain from engaging in comment sections on social media posts about this tragedy. It will be weaponized in potential criminal and civil cases. Fly low. Another text advised, if law enforcement or an attorney for the suspect contacts you in any capacity, let someone here know right away for guidance on how to address them. So don't talk to the cops. Talk to us first. That sounds like something that a company would tell its employees if they had any sort of legal exposure or they thought they might be sued if there was some kind of an incident, so that they can direct all inquiries to their own lawyers. Right? A lot of companies have their own firm that they contract with, or maybe internally they have their own lawyers. Pro wrestlers, though, are not employees. They're independent contractors. And telling them not to talk to the cops if they reach out, these wrestlers are under no obligation to listen to anything these people have to say. This should not be about protecting Knox Pro. They need to be held liable for what happened just the same as Raja does. What that looks like, I don't know. But they definitely bear a lot of responsibility here as well. Now, Doug Drago, the guy who finally pulled Raja off of Stu, he worked for Knox Pro for 3 years. He was on that same podcast to talk about the incident. He doesn't work there anymore because, like he says, they would watch me die. These people showed that they would just watch me die. How can I trust you with my body after something like this? He also said that while he doesn't like Rajan, he thinks he's a shit person for what he did. AJ Mana is a bigger shit person for gassing him up and causing him to ruin his own life. And in his view, AJ ruined two people's lives that night. And he's not wrong. In fact, he's absolutely right. He should be punished in some way for his role in this as well. I don't know that he will be punished legally, but at the very least, no promotion should want to work with him after this. I don't have a lot of faith that that's going to happen. There are people in the wrestling business that have done far worse things who get hired again somewhere because that's the wrestling business. Usually, though, it's people who actually draw money. Like, the promoter can excuse bad behavior because that person has a name and they can sell tickets. I don't know that AJ's a big draw. So it would be nice to see other promotions stand up and say, you're not welcome here. Then you got wrestlers like Rob Van Dam tweeting out, so far, I got Raja's back, as a tease for his video that went up the next day on YouTube. He didn't have his back so much as in the video he was explaining how he could understand the reasons why this guy would have reacted the way he did. But he knew what he was doing when he tweeted that out, and he rightfully got flamed for being an idiot. And I get it. His other content doesn't look like it gets much in the way of engagement or views. Then you have Mark Henry speaking to TMZ saying, if what I saw was what I saw, which is people before the show drinking and intoxicated or partially intoxicated, you bust a bottle over a guy's head and talk trash like that guy was not going to do anything. Yeah, you're at fault. Very nice. It was a can, not a bottle. But I assume Mark didn't see the multiple apologies and the handshake that followed. You know, he was just going off half-cocked. It's one of the reasons I like waiting a few days for things to settle in some of these situations, if I can, just to try to get a fuller picture of what actually happened. There's so much more video that I came across in the days after the incident that adds a lot of context. But you only need so much context in this case to know that the one at fault is the man who beat someone half to death. He also said about Psycho Stu, what kind of example are you as a veteran for inciting a riot with a kid? I've seen that word thrown around a lot this week also, kid. He's just a kid. He's 25 years old. He talks about him like he's some rookie out of high school. Stop talking about him like he doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. Like he's a child who should be given the benefit of the doubt. He's a grown-ass man behaving like a child. But that doesn't mean he should be treated like one. Chael Sonnen was the worst of them all. I'm not even going to dignify what he said with a response. But Chael is terrible anyway, so I'm not surprised he would say a bunch of stupid shit. There is no justification for what Raja Jackson did. You can try to make sense of it, and he would have ended up so blinded by anger that, you know, he would do what he did. But there's no justifying it for assigning anything even remotely close to equal blame to the victim here. It's like, imagine after Travis Scott tagged Cody Rhodes with that open hand slap at Elimination Chamber, where he busted Cody's eardrum, if Cody came back at WrestleMania to get his receipt, and he proceeded to pound Travis into unconsciousness. Obviously, that would never happen. But I don't doubt that you would have had people praising Cody for defending the business. Travis started it. You know, whatever. There would be no justification for something like that, because that is not how a well-adjusted, stable human being acts. This is a man that needs psychological help. And he can get that help while he serves out his sentence. Let's take some mailbag questions. You can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. I want to start here with Keish from New Jersey, who has an audio question regarding Oba Femi.
What's up, Solo? I know you usually don't do fantasy booking, but I've been really impressed with what I've been seeing from Oba Femi. He has superstar written all over him, like Jacob Fatu and Bron Breakker. I would just want to know, how would you book his first year on the main roster? Would it be like a Brock Lesnar 0-2 style run, or like a Gunther run? Slow build up through the mid card, win a mid card title, then eventually world title.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've been very impressed with what I've seen from Oba Femi. I mean, it looks like he's got all the tools to be that guy. And I think going the Gunther route, I think going with the Gunther blueprint is the way to go here. You know, if you remember, they debuted Gunther on the main roster and they almost instantly put the Intercontinental title on him. And he went on this undefeated run until he ultimately got beat by Sami Zayn at WrestleMania. I might not even beat him then. I mean, just have him run through guys until you're ready to strap that world championship around his waist. He can be that special. So the blueprint worked with Gunther. I think it could work with Oba too. I just worry, you know, with some of these guys, you just rush into things too quickly, and then maybe it's too much too soon, or even if it's not, and he can handle it just fine. Do the fans resent him for it? I just think you take your time with it and just have him rampage through that roster and then ultimately work his way up to that championship. I'm not saying it has to take 2 years, 3 years for him to get to that point. It may happen very quickly. It may happen within 6 months. You know, it might happen in less than a year. But that's how I would do it. James from Staten Island. I watched the entire interview that Roman Reigns did discussing the Attitude Era, specifically Steve Austin and The Rock, and I have to say that I could not hold back the laughter. He discussed how easy it was for them with catchphrases and whatnot to get over, and how the modern era requires more nuance. Now, Jimmy, I don't know what interview you're referring to because you didn't bother to mention it or link to it, so I'm assuming this may have come from Roman's interview on Stephanie McMahon's podcast. I don't know. But he says, I don't know how Roman could ever talk about it being easy at the top for anyone when he himself has had the easiest ride to the top of anyone in WWE history, even more than John Cena. As much as I may not like him, I can at least say that when John Cena got the top spot, he was massively popular as the Doctor of Thuganomics before he became a great value version of Hulk Hogan. But Roman, when he got the top spot, he wasn't even the second most popular guy on the roster. And this has always been my issue with Roman as a performer. I have never had an issue with him being a top star. My issue is that they made him the only top star. Who else did they push and protect to that degree? No one. He flopped as a top babyface, and instead of giving someone else an opportunity, they gave him a promotion by making him an unstoppable villain and fed him the entire roster for 4 years. So for Roman to talk about anybody having it easy at the top just makes him a massive hypocrite. What do you think? Again, I don't know what interview it was that this is specifically from. There was an interview that Roman did years ago with Sports Illustrated where he actually talked about this. And I had to go find the quote because I couldn't remember the exact quote. But this is what Roman had to say. And again, this is a few years ago to SI. He said, I feel like John Cena said it before. It's a challenge to be PG. It's a challenge to not have to go the cheap route. Being able to shove everything up everyone's ass to do that stuff, to just chug beers. I'm not taking anything away from the performance and the physicality of what they did and the stories they told in the ring. These guys were great performers and great in-ring wrestlers, but the character development was easier. If I could just start chugging bourbon and smoking cigars, imagine what my character could be. We could go even further on this mob boss thing. It's more challenging what we do now. It's the facts. That's why the business is bigger. So when he says that, he's not totally wrong. It is a more restrictive product now than it was 30 years ago. Back at that point, they weren't even a public company yet. They didn't go public until late 99. It was still a private company. Their backs were against the wall leading up to that point. Then the Attitude Era exploded, and that's when their ratings soared, and they started to make all this money, and they just took off way beyond what WCW was doing. And so they just kept doing it. And when you do that, you're doing Crash TV, and you're being risque, and you're allowing all of this foul language, and people are drinking beers, and they're telling people to suck their dicks, and they have Godfather and the Ho Train. I mean, all this stuff that's going on. Of course, that's going to get over to a predominantly male audience, especially at that time. It was a heavily teenage male audience. So I understand what he's saying. There are things that were allowed back then that Austin and Rock and all these people were allowed to do that in today's WWE, especially when Vince was still there, let alone now, you couldn't get away with that, right? There's handcuffs put on you to some degree where it's like, okay, you can't rely on all that stuff to get over. You're going to have to get over on your own merits. Not only are you going to have to get over on your own merits, you're going to have to get over at a time when Vince McMahon was out to fucking lunch and just didn't have it anymore and didn't know what he was doing most of the time. And if anybody knows about that, it's Roman Reigns, because Roman Reigns is the one who had to go out there when Vince was personally handwriting his promos for a while, and he had to go out there on SmackDown and say, suffer and succotash. So if anybody knows about that, it's Roman Reigns. I don't even put that on some of the stuff they had Roman doing, because he was Vince's little pet project. I can't even put all of that on Roman. Roman was not ready for the spot that they were pushing him in at that time. He just wasn't ready. You see that now. Like the version of Roman Reigns, the tribal chief version of Roman Reigns from 2021, really 2022, it's a totally different person than the one that you see in 2015, 2016, 2017. 2017, when he got embarrassed by John Cena in that promo battle, right? Totally different person. So he makes some good points. He's not totally wrong. To imply, if that's what he's doing, and again, I don't know what interview you're looking at, so I'm just going off what you're telling me here, but if the implication was, well, it was easy for those guys to get over. It's you know, a lot harder now for us to get over. Yes and no. Whatever restrictions may or may not be put on you, it's not an easy thing to get over. It's not. And the fans can be very fickle about what they like and who they like and for how long they like them. So I wouldn't ever say, oh, it's easy to get over, right? Some people are going to get over. Some people are not going to get over ever, no matter what, because they don't have that quality that the fans can get behind, or they're just not that good at their job. And then there are some guys where it just comes more naturally, but I would never ever sit here and say, oh, it's so easy to become a top guy. I mean, there's such limited real estate at the top. You have to be a special performer. Yes, Roman was shoved down people's throats by Vince McMahon because he had the long hair. And remember, he had the blue contact lenses in, and he had a certain look that Vince was probably, you know, touching himself every time he looked at him. And he wasn't ready for that spot. Roman grew into it. So you say that, well, instead of him being punished for not being the guy, he got promoted. No, they course corrected. That's what they did. Because he should have been a heel all along. They course corrected. They put Paul Heyman with him, and they did what they should have already been doing, and he got over as a heel. And the product, as far as like the business they're doing, you know, all the billions and billions of dollars in media rights and everything, it did come at a time when Roman was their top star. I'm not saying Roman is the one who's responsible solely for all of that, but you still have to have the right people in the right spots. Roman was the right guy for that spot at the time, and the company exploded business-wise. They've done more business in the last 5 years than they have in the entire existence of the company. So how can you sit there and say that he was promoted to this spot as the top villain when he shouldn't have been? The numbers prove otherwise. And if he sucked, then the fans would have rebelled against it. The fans embraced it. to the point where he hasn't even changed much about his character, but he came back and everybody cheers for him and they put their fingers in the air and they say, OTC, OTC. So again, yes and no, it's not a simple black and white answer, but you know, you can't say that Roman in the spot that he's been in for the last 5 years should not have been in that spot because their success proves otherwise. You may not like the guy. You may have an axe to grind with him or some of the things that he says, but that's just the way that it is. So yeah, I would never agree with that saying, well, it was a lot easier for guys back then. You know, it might have been easier just because of the restrictions that are there now that didn't exist then, but I don't know that he was implying that it was easy. It's not easy to get over and become a top guy in the biggest company in the world, right? That's not an easy thing to do. But they did have a certain freedom that guys just don't have now. And my God, I mean, if they even tried to do half the shit that they did back then in the late 90s, they would be fucking canceled in a heartbeat. I mean, are you kidding me? It would be there'd be controversies every week. It would be great for me. I'd have stories galore. I'd have stories up the ass to be talking about on the podcast every week. Every week there would be a new controversy to talk about. So he's not wrong on that front. Stewart from Paisley, 16 years strong of listening to the sound of. I have a question, but also a side note. On the podcast, you said that you might have to keep Peacock for Saturday night's main event. Would your VPN not allow you to watch the event free on YouTube? I'm sure here in the UK, it streams there. That is an interesting point. I don't know where Saturday night's main event airs in the UK. All my UK peeps out there, let me know. Does Saturday night's main event air free on YouTube over there? Because I'm sure with the VPN, it would work. But I just hadn't thought about that. Actually, I just assumed everything over there is on Netflix. Could probably just use the VPN and do that. Also, I was thinking about WWE and its counter-programming against AEW. Do you think they could end up licensing out their match concepts to AAA and TNA? For example, a AAA Royal Rumble or TNA Elimination Chamber. I would imagine in these situations they would have the creative control on how the match was presented. I know these companies have their own matches, but these brands would certainly grab headlines away from any AEW events taking place on those days and might even assist TNA in getting a TV deal if they can promote these match types as a one-off. Or do you think these match concepts are things that are uniquely WWE and set them apart from their competitors? Yeah, I mean, these are WWE concepts. Like, I wouldn't want to whore them out. I mean, not that TKO is above whoring themselves out, I'm sure, but these are concepts that are unique to WWE, and I don't think that they want anybody else using them, but also, like, AAA and TNA, they have their own match concepts. So why would they be, you know, borrowing WWE concepts when they have their own, and their goal should be to make their own concepts bigger and better? I wouldn't be, you know, stealing from WWE or taking from WWE. Oh, we'll do an Elimination Chamber. You know, we'll do a whatever Money in the Bank match. They have their own. They don't need from WWE. Believe me, if they want to counter program AEW with some of these other promotions, they could just send their talent there. Like, if there's a TNA pay-per-view running opposite an AEW pay-per-view, all WWE has to do is take one relatively big name on the roster, it doesn't even have to be the biggest name, and just promote them for the show. They can fuck with AEW that way. Jesse from Johannesburg, South Africa. With all of the Chris Jericho chatter of late, I figured I would ask, what was Jericho's best run / gimmick in all of his WWE stints? Personally, I love the 08-11 run when he was the stoic heel. That's when I got into wrestling, so I may be biased. That's what I was going to say. I think that 08-11 run, I think he has said before that he kind of modeled the character off of Anton Sugar from No Country for Old Men, who was a great villain. Great movie and a very disturbing villain. That run was probably number one for me. So I think you and I are in agreement on that. Malik from Queens, New York, been a big fan since 2016. Clash in Paris could be the perfect night to crown LA Knight as the World Heavyweight Champion. Not only is he overdue for a run with the belt, but it would give that unpredictability element that WWE has been missing for a long time. Plus, Seth Rollins can win it back in a month or two, and WWE can continue with whatever plans they have for WrestleMania. Staying on the subject, who are your top three WWE wrestlers who should have won a world title but did not? Putting the belt on LA Knight for a month just to give it back to Seth Rollins and then demote him back down the card doesn't do a whole hell of a lot for me. And it doesn't do a whole hell of a lot for LA Knight unless they have a damn solid plan for him coming out of that. So without a top storyline for him moving forward, coming out of that title loss, I don't see the point in doing it. I wouldn't bother. And top three WWE stars to never hold a world title. I mean, there's a lot of names that can go on that list. My list generally revolves between a few names. Roddy Piper, Ted DiBiase, Mr. Perfect, and Samoa Joe. Because they absolutely should have put the Universal title on Samoa Joe in 2017 when they had the chance. So you can't go wrong with any of those guys. Zach from Liberty, Kentucky, I just wanted to tell you that this month and this year marks 10 years I've been a follower of your podcast, and I love the great work that you're doing. Thank you, Zach. I have a buy, rent, sell on these outstanding women's matches. Toni Storm against Mariah May, Revolution 2025. Bayley and Sasha Banks, TakeOver Brooklyn, 2015, and Rhea Ripley against Charlotte Flair, WrestleMania 39. All great matches. I think that Tony and Mariah match, that's the Hollywood ending match, which was a great match. I have to buy on Sasha and Bayley. That is always going to be tops on my list. It was not only just a great match, but just a great build up and story to it, and just the atmosphere and the historical significance of it. You put it all together, it can't be topped. I'm going to buy on that one. I'm going to rent on Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania 39, and I'm going to sell on the Hollywood ending between Toni Storm and Mariah May. It's close. I went back and forth on whether to rent on that one and sell on the Mania match, but I got to stick to that order. And Jonathan from Charlotte, North Carolina. Buy, sell, and rent on the biggest storyline that WWE dropped the ball on. The Invasion, the Summer of Punk in 2011, or John Cena's heel turn. This is an easy one. Always, now and always, the Invasion. I buy on the Invasion. The Invasion, it was such... There was so much money left on the table, more than any of the other things that you just mentioned here. It's almost sickening. So the Invasion is absolutely number one. I'm going to buy on that. I'm going to the biggest drop ball on. I'll go with the Cena heel turn, and then I'll sell on the Summer of Punk. Summer of Punk in 2011 absolutely could have been done better, but it's not as egregious as the other ones. The John Cena heel turn, I can't put that in number one because I just don't think it was... It just wasn't the right time for it. You know, had Rock stuck around, sure, you know, it could have been a lot more fun. It was just the wrong time. They just waited too long. It just wasn't going to work in his retirement year. So I'll rent on that one. But now and always, have to buy on the Invasion. Just an absolute wasted opportunity for a lot of reasons. It's not just creative malfeasance on the part of WWE. There were other, you know, circumstances involved where guys were making guaranteed money and they wanted to just sit on their ass for a year or two and then come. And I can't blame them, but if they had greater access to that talent, then maybe things could have been different. But yes, the Invasion was not what it should have been. But you can keep emailing me your questions, and I shall do my best to answer them. TheSolemnMonster@gmail.com. Again, please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Not everybody does, so I remind you every week. You'd be surprised how many people still don't. But if you want to get your question on the show, that's the best way to do so. I'm going to be live with you tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the YouTube channel, SolemnMonster Sounds Off. If you're not subscribed, I don't know what the hell you're waiting for. Go make sure you're subscribed. We'll talk about Clash in Paris tomorrow night. There is another early Raw on Monday. It airs on Netflix without a VPN even. You don't even need the VPN. 2 p.m. Eastern time. It airs early. I will be going live most likely 8 p.m.? Yeah, I would say 8 p.m. I'll stick to the... I didn't stick to the 8 p.m. time on Friday because there were other things I wanted to watch. And I was like, you know what? This show's going to be over at 4 o'clock. Fuck it. Let's go live now. And then we could have dinner at our relatively normal time and then go about the rest of our evening. Raw's 2.5 hours. It's a little bit longer. So we'll stick to 8 p.m. So 8 p.m. on Monday night, we'll go live for the Raw recap. That is, I guess that's September 1st, right? We're already into September. So anyway, that's what's coming up in the next few days. And then on Thursday, I'm going to be driving down to Philadelphia because we have House of Glory in Philly, and I hope to see some of you there. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. I will see you back here for the flagship next Sunday. Back to our normal day, episode 928 of The Sound Off. Until then, take care, guys.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
On July 21st, with Stephanie Vaquer and Io Sky, and that match ended in a disqualification. Then you fast forward to July 28th, we had Jey Uso against Bronson Reed, which ended in a disqualification. August 4th, you had Seth Rollins one-on-one against LA Knight for the World Heavyweight Championship. In a match that ended in a disqualification. And then we arrived tonight. We had CM Punk and LA Knight against Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. And wouldn't you know, how did this match end? It ended in a disqualification. As a match, it was fine. It was a good main event until we hit the finish. And then I realized, boy, I feel like I have suffered from deja vu. It almost feels like I've seen this before. It's almost like I'm watching a rerun. Sheamus comes out. He talks about banger after banger. We could talk about DQ after DQ after DQ.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007.
Bringing you the good, the bad, and the ugly. Check out the weekly live streams, bonus content for subscribers, and follow The Sala Monster on Facebook, Instagram, and X. The Sala Monster.
I love you so long.